Today I want to explore a little bit the possibilities with you together about reviving a relationship when it seems that the relationship, or at least the version 1.0 of the relationship, came to its end. I want to start with an illustration that probably all the men in the room will understand. I had a quite big dilemma a few months ago. I had a car, and I really loved that car. We had so many nice family experiences together with this car, and, you know, it comes always the time when there are more than 200,000 kilometers in that car. And this is, in my mind, a borderline. I need to get rid of that car. When it has so many kilometers, it starts getting expensive to keep the car. It will lose its value and something will break, something will need to be fixed, so it will be very expensive. But I had this dilemma in my mind. I love this car. Should I keep it on the expense that it will be more and more expensive to keep it? Or should I jump out of that car, sell it very quickly and buy a new one? And you know what I'm really happy about? It is that this dilemma in my mind was only connected to my car. But I meet so many people who have the same question with their spouse. You know, we are driving together for 10, 15, 20, 25 years, and it became boring. Nothing new, nothing special, always the same thing, every day, the same person laying in the bed next to me, always the same smells, always the same words, everything is the same. Well, I'm just 40-something. If I jump out very quickly, then I can push that restart button and start a new family. But should I spend the rest of my life in this relationship? Or should I trade my spouse? This is the big question many people bring to my office. And I just want to show you some examples how it feels in this stage of life. I brought you three quotations from my previous clients with whom I used to work together. And these are the expressions how they formulated the state of their marriage at the end of the 1.0 version. Let us see the first one. I felt like living together with a stranger. He was not the man anymore whom I used to know. Constant disagreements led to tension. Tension led to fight. After months of fighting, I decided to escape from this madness. I moved out from home, she reports. Another one. Christmas, candles, cake, sweet atmosphere, but not in our home. Our souls are sobbing. The pain is unbearable because we both feel that our broken marriage came to the verge. I didn't plan how to tell him. It just came over me. As I cleaned up the house, it just broke out of me. I fell to the floor crying. I can't do this any longer. I have no idea who this man is. We are not even friends anymore. Our relationship, our marriage lacks everything that ties two people together. I'm desperately lonely. Let's see a third one. Our quarrels ended up more often in yelling and intentionally hurting each other. No matter how hard we tried to resist the urge, the outcome was always the same. We chewed the same bone for 1,000 times. The conversations followed the same script over and over again. They didn't let us closer to each other. Instead, we hurt each other deeper and deeper. If you feel connected to these couples, maybe it's time for a radical change. Maybe there is something that cannot any longer like you used to maintain your relationship. It is like the Rubik's Cube. I'm sure you are familiar with this toy. I must admit I'm very proud of this toy because it is a Hungarian invention. Did you know that? And it was invented in 1974. And 1974 is a very good year. So I am very proud of that toy, but on the other side, I'm really, really angry on that toy because I could never solve it. The most I could do were 2 sides, but never the 6. But I have a cousin who is a master of the Rubik's Cube. She can make it in less than half minute. I tried to mess it up as much as I could, but she took it in the hand, and it was ready. Oh, she is the living example that it is possible to solve the Rubik's Cube. But you know, it is the same how people treat marriage. They tried it again, and came to the conclusion, it simply doesn't work. Throw it away. But there are living examples who can show us that it is possible. It is possible to solve this riddle called marriage, to live happily together for decades in a good relationship, in loyalty to each other, in commitment to each other with the same spouse. It is possible. But how? How can we move on from 1.0 to a 2.0? To trade the relationship without trading the spouse. These couples came to the conclusion that the way how they maintained their relationship came to its end. They already buried the marriage 1.0. But there is still hope. There is a resurrection. There is a resurrection of marriage into a 2.0. How does that work? And what are the signs that we came to the end of the 1.0 version? Let us see some signs. Sign number one, you don't care anymore how the other feels in a quarrel. Till now, there were some words which you didn't said because you didn't want to hurt the other person. But now, you don't care anymore. You don't care anymore if you hurt them. You just say it how you mean it, and it comes out of you. It just flows out of you. A second sign can be, in a conflict, it becomes more important that you are right than to solve the conflict. The real matter of the conflict is not anymore to solve a certain issue. The real matter is that I win and you lose. It becomes more and more important to be right all the time. You let go the bonding rituals that were so important to you in the past. Every couple has dozens of these small bonding rituals. I'm sure you have them too. When I go home, I know exactly what will happen. I go in front of the door. I don't use my key because I know it is very important for my wife that she greets me in the door. So I just stay in the door, and I have this special knocking on the door, you know. This is the sign that Daddy arrived. So I'm there, I'm standing in the door. My wife comes, opens the door, locks the door up, and then she goes two steps in the back because she knows that the dog is running. She don't want to stay in the way of the dog. The dog is running, jumps around me, and then goes back in the house, and then she comes. And I could mark a sign on the floor on that spot where she stands every single time. She stands there, waits for me like this. This is our bonding ritual. We did it 1,000 times. And I would feel very strange if she wouldn't greet me like this. Because this is part of our inner culture, of our inner world that we created. Or another bonding ritual, the goodnight kiss. However the day was, at the end of the day, we need to look in each other's eyes and to give this special goodnight kiss to each other. But imagine at that stage of marriage, it simply doesn't fit into the way how we feel towards each other to give each other this goodnight kiss. So a very strange game starts. We try to find some reason why we have to go earlier to bed to avoid the situation to be in the urge of give the goodnight kiss without feeling the emotions to give the goodnight kiss. So we ran into the bed and pretend to sleep when the other person is coming in. So the other comes in and we pretend to sleep, and the other knows exactly that we don't sleep. But this is part of the game, because it doesn't fit in the relationship right now to kiss each other, because we lost connection and we lost this bonding ritual that was so important to us earlier in our marriage. You hurt each other intentionally. I don't care if it hurts you. I will say it. I will do it because I have the right to do it. I have the right to say it. I don't care about your feelings. The sexual encounters become rare. This is tragical itself, but it can be even worse because it doesn't bother you anymore. You found some good replacement, not necessarily another person, some activity, something, some new hobby which grabs your attention, grabs your emotions. And who cares about sex? You can imagine your life without him or without her. You start formulating some alternative scripts in your mind about a future without the other person. You don't want any bad for the other person, but you start fantasizing. What if? Just, you know, like in the cartoons, a piano falls down from the sky and she stands right below it. Every problem solved in the split of the second. You start fantasizing about different things. I asked once a couple, an elderly couple, have you ever thought about a divorce? No. Divorce? Never. We are Christians. Well, I thought about killing her, but not about a divorce. That's not an option. And you carry lots of unsolved issues from the past. And it contagious everything around you. You pick up a topic to have a conversation, and the topic itself is contaminated with pressure, with tension. And you fight about everything because you have so many unresolved issues from the past. But let us see the good news. Because, as we have learned in the last 2 days, we have power over what? We have power over the trajectory of our relationships. We can make decisions, we can take actions, and we can turn the things around. We can turn the bad tendencies around, and we can turn the dying relationship 1.0 into a very living, vital relationship 2.0. How do we do that? In the last few years, I worked together with more than 100 couples who arrived to this stage, and I recognized that there is a pattern. Not only in the way how the relationship comes to the end, but also in the way how you can revive a dead relationship. There is a pattern. There are certain stations in which you go through, then you can expect your relationship to come to a much better state. I would like to explore these stages together with you. There are 6 stages which I explored. Stage number 1. Love is a decision. Forget about Hollywood. Forget about all the fairy tales. Love is mainly a decision. You don't believe it? Let me give you a few examples how it works in other parts of life. You know that I'm father of 2 children, and it happens sometimes that late in the evening, on a Thursday evening, when I'm really tired, when I'm really exhausted, and the only thing I am able to do is to sit on the couch with the remote control in my hand, because it gives the sense of controlling the things, you know, switch myself into the zombie mode and doing this. This is everything I am capable to do. And at once, I hear a voice from behind, and I recognize it's probably my daughter. And she tells me, "Daddy, Daddy, Daddy, I have a big problem. You need to help me immediately. Who are you?" I'm not there anymore. Daddy, you need to help me. I just realized that I have some homework for my German class tomorrow. I need to write an essay of 200 words. If you don't help me, I will fail. I can't do that. What do you think? Where are my emotions in that very moment? What do my emotions motivate me to do? Leave me alone. Don't you see that my working hours are over? It's me time. Give me peace. Leave me alone. Go away. I don't want to see you. Although I love my children. I would give my life for them. But in that moment, my emotions are in a totally different direction. But you know what? I'm not listening to my emotions. I listen to my mind. And I make a decision. I say to myself, come on, put yourself together. She's your daughter. She needs your help. And you love her. At least you claim to love her. Now is a good possibility to show it. Go with her to her room and help her to make that German housework for tomorrow. And I do it. I put my emotions into brackets. They are still there, but I don't listen to them. I put them into brackets. And then I go with her. We start to write that German homework for tomorrow at 10 in the evening. And about 12:30, in the middle of the night, I start thinking, what are we doing right now? And we are talking for more than 1 hour about that boy there at school who has such a six-pack, Daddy. You should see it. You have never had six-pack like that. And if you would see how he kicks the ball, oh, we forget already the German homework because we finished it, but we are talking, and she opens such a space in her life where I haven't been for years. And I start feeling very good because I made the decision. You know what the emotions do right now? They reorganize themselves and start to support the decision. First, they attacked my decision, but now they reorganize themselves and they start to support my decision. Let me give you another example. I have the best job in the world. I witness miracles every day. But there are days when my emotions tell me not to go out of the bed. Maybe you know that emotion. My emotions tell me, stay in the bed. You deserve to have a day off. Take your iPad, switch that red N sign, you know, with your favorite series, and watch the new episode of your favorite series. You deserve it. This is what my emotions tell me to do. But I make a decision. I put my emotions into brackets and I go to work. And when I finish with the second or third couple that day, and we found a really important point in their life, we found a breakthrough in their problem, in their struggle, my emotions start to support me. And they tell me, it's so good that you woke up this morning. It's so good that you find a way to help these people. You are good. You see what happened? My emotions first attacked my decisions, but after a while, as I stick to my decisions, my emotions started to reorganize themselves. We do it in our parenting. We do it in our job. We do it in our health even. This picture here was made as I was 5 years old, and this is my father. My father was a chain smoker that time. He smoked at least two boxes of cigarettes every day. And just 2 years later, my siblings were born. I was always praying for a brother, and then they came in a double pack with my sister. So my father said, if this is not a big reason enough to quit smoking, then the day will never come when I will quit smoking. It's enough. I poisoned my family, I poisoned my wife, I poisoned my son with smoke. I don't want to poison my newborn children anymore, so I quit smoking today. And I witnessed his battle with smoking. The first 2 weeks, he was all the time touching his pockets for some cigarettes. He tried to look here, but there was no pocket, and his fingers slipped down all the time, and I saw him growing older 5 years within 2 weeks. He went like this. He was a broken person. His emotions told him all the time, "What are you doing? Just take just one breath, one smoke, one cigarette. It's not the end of the world. Come on, you deserve it. Just one." But he resisted. He sticked to his decision. And after 2 weeks, I saw a change. He was not going like this anymore, but he was going like this. He became proud of his decision not to poison himself and his family anymore. And he started motivating his friends. "When will you stop smoking? Do you know how good it is to be finally free? It's so good not to smoke." And four of his friends have stopped smoking because of his influence. He made a decision. And later, as he was talking about this experience, he told me, "I'm not doing what feels good, but I'm doing what is right. I'm doing what is right." If it works with parenting, if it works with health, if it works with work, give me one reason why it shouldn't work with marriage. It works. Make a decision. Because love is a decision. And maybe your emotions attack your decision in the first period of time. Don't listen to them. Put them into brackets and stick to your decisions. Because after a while, you will see that your emotions start to reorganize themselves and they start to support your decision. Step number two you can do. The grass is greener if you water it. And that's the point. You need to water it. You know the joke that the grass is always greener at the neighbor's garden. And the wife and the husband of the neighbor is always prettier, always with a smile on the face, always kinder than your spouse at home. But your grass can be green too if you water it. There was that couple at the beginning of their 40s, a very, very nice couple. And I think it was the third session that we had together. And I asked them, "When was the last time when you were together, you know, intimately together?" He started thinking, "Oh, I'm not sure. Was it before the summer vacation or after the summer vacation?" Our conversation was in February. So, before or after the summer vacation? I said, "Okay, it doesn't matter. I got the answer. So at least a half year." "Yes, yes, yes. We can agree on that. Yes, at least a half year." "So what did you do since then?" "Well, we were waiting for something to happen, that some magical feeling will come, and then we will look on each other and have this spark in the eyes, you know, and then we move towards the bedroom at the same pace." But it didn't happen. "Okay. Are you willing to do an exercise? Right here, right now?" "Yes, right here, right now." No, not that. Another one. I asked the husband to stretch out his hands, to close his eyes, and start to touch the face of his wife. And I asked him to give me a report from the inside. What is going on there? Where are his thoughts, his emotions in that moment? What is going on the inside when he touches the face of his wife? And he started. "Here are the ears, this is the nose, there's the eye." "Stop, stop. do it more gently. Do it more kindly. Put some emotions in it. And he started again. Well, this is her nose. And I must admit, you know, I'm an architect, and it always fascinated me how straight her nose is. I think the first thing that I fell in love with was her nose. Her nose really fascinated me. I love her nose. These are the eyes. And I still remember, as I saw her the first time, she was smiling with her eyes, without smiling with the other parts of her face. It was so impressive to me to see these smiling eyes. I really love those eyes. This is her mouth. I'm sure you have recognized too that one of her lips is much bigger than the other. And I just caught myself fantasizing before our first date, how does it feel to kiss those lips and to take this bigger lip between my lips and hold it there for a few seconds? And I was so happy as I did it the first time. I can still recall that feeling, how happy I was to hold her lips between my lips. And he went on to the whole face of her. I looked at her. After a few minutes, there was a teardrop, then another one, and it started to flow uncontrollably. And I asked them, "What happened here? How did you felt as he started to touch your face, to stroke your face, to tell what goes on his mind?" She reported me, "Well, first, it was like getting a massage. But after that, his touches became so soft, so gentle. I was thinking all the time, when was the last time as he touched me so gently, and I couldn't remember? It meant so much for me. It was such a deep experience for me. I'm so thankful now." You see what happened here? You can create intimacy in a moment by being intentional. Don't wait for the big emotion that overflows you. Start doing it. Because while you are doing it, it becomes more and more natural, and the emotions will line up after your decision. They will support you. So start watering the grass, and it will become greener. I love gardens, and I love gardening. And I love TV shows about gardens. And there was that documentary about castles in England. And they interviewed the gardener of this castle. And the reporter asked, "What can I do in order to have at home such a wonderful green grass like you have here?" He said, "Oh, that's very simple. You have to sow the seeds and then water it. Cut it, water it, cut it, water it, cut it. After 400 years, your grass will be just like this here." I don't have 400 years. I want to start right now. I want to do it right now because my marriage happens now. And when I go home, I want to be there for my wife. I want to hug her. I want to kiss her. I want to do something. Because I want to water my grass so it becomes greener than any other grass. Step number three. Reformulate or reload your sexual integrity. This is a very, very sensitive issue. Every time when a couple comes to me and the husband is in his 40s, I have some set of questions that I ask from him because I know how vulnerable we are in that age. It is that age when we start thinking, well, if I count correctly, I'm just in the middle. Physically, I will be never stronger like I am now. Mentally, I will not be any smarter than I am now. Have I reached everything that I dreamed about as a little boy that I want to reach as an adult person? Of course, it always comes out that I haven't reached everything. So they get in panic and they try to do in the shortest time everything that they need, that they think that they haven't realized yet in their life. They haven't performed yet. And it happens so easily to break the boundaries of a marriage. And especially when it comes to friends, you should know what kind of weird conversations men have among themselves with a cup of beer. I already did it. Are you still together with her? And conversations like this happen all the time. As I realized the reality of the danger, and I'm not talking just about secular couples, it happened to Christian couples as well. As I realized the potential of crossing the boundaries, I made a very, very difficult exercise. I took a sheet of paper and wrote all the names of my friends on that paper. And then I asked myself, if I would lose my mind and I would get involved into an affair, who of these friends would cover me? Who would support me that my wife doesn't find it out? And I started to erase the names of those whom I think would cover my story. A few names remained on that paper. These are my closest friends now, because I know I can count on them. I know they respect not only me, but my wife and my marriage too. I know these guys don't want to look only into my eyes with a clear conscience, but they want to look into my wife's eyes with a clear conscience. And I didn't tell the other ones, you know, you were on my list, but I erased your name. I never do this. But I started to come closer to those who remained on my list. And you know, on one day, I woke up with that very strange idea in my mind. And I knew exactly, if I stick to that idea, it will put my marriage into danger. But I couldn't get rid of that idea. I had that picture in my mind and I couldn't get rid of it. So you know what I did? I took my phone, called one of my best friends, and I said to him, Robert, I need your help. There is that weird thought in my mind. I haven't asked for it. I don't want it to be there. And I know if I cherish, if I foster this idea, this thought, it will put my marriage into danger. I love my wife. My marriage is important to me. I want to make myself accountable for you. And I empower you now. Call me every week, at least once, and ask me where I am with this thought. Ask me at least once a week. We ended the conversation. Just 1 week later, my phone rang. Oh, it's Robert. Hi, Robert. How are you? What's going on with you? And he said with a very serious tone, Gabor, this is not our usual friendly conversation. I want to make you accountable for your thought. Robert, wait a minute. Which thought do you exactly mean? You see what happened? Just by making myself accountable to somebody, just by putting myself into the situation that I need to report about this, it just disappeared and never came back. Reformulate your sexual integrity. Because the danger is realistic. So everything that you do against it needs to be realistic too. Step number four. If you can't change it, accept it. What do I understand when I say this? There was that young couple in the middle of their 30s, and I never saw a lady so humiliated like I saw her on that day. They sat on the couch, and I asked them about the reason why they came here, what is the matter in which they need help, and he looked at me. Come on, it's not obvious. Just look at her. I said, why should it be so obvious? What should I see when I look at her? Come on, don't pretend. You are a man. Would you have sexual desire for her like this? And she was so ashamed. It was terrible. So after a half an hour, it came out that after giving birth to two children, she had 5 kilos more than at her wedding day. And he really did everything to solve the problem. He was the best husband ever. She just recently had a birthday, and he bought her a full month ticket to the gym with a personal trainer. He did really everything. And how she reacted on that? She broke out crying and threw out the ticket. So I said to him, you know what? You tried it this way, but you see what the result is. You are not closer to each other, even a centimeter. How about you choose a different way? What should I do differently? You mean I should buy a cake for her? Maybe. And then she will get slimmer? I don't know. But I'm sure that when you continue this, what you're doing now, she will definitely not get slimmer and you will ruin your marriage. I can guarantee you this. Because it is the following. Every time you say something negative about your wife's body, you put a big piece of bacon, put it on her stomach, and it will stick there. Every time when you criticize your wife's body, you take such a big piece of fat, put it on her butt, and it glues there. What do you think? How much fat you have put on your wife's body during this half an hour here?
I never thought about this like this.
What is going on here? I asked her to describe for me, who is her best ally in this moment?
Well, my best ally, I never thought about this, but it's definitely not my husband, because I consider him more as an enemy, like an ally.
Yes, I know. I know who it is. It is the fridge. The fridge is always kind to me, always welcomes me, always comforts me. I can always count on the fridge. The fridge is my best ally. Then I said to him, what about you would exercise a radical acceptance towards your wife, however she looks, but you feel, you give her the feeling to be totally accepted by you. And then she will not need her prior ally anymore, the fridge. And maybe she can be critical to her prior ally. And she will be closer to you. It works. I experienced it in so many ways. There was that girl. My son brought her home. He was so proud to introduce her to us. And I was shocked. Hair black, eyebrows black, eyes black, nails black, clothes black, everything black, soul black. I was really shocked. I went on Facebook to check her. Her profile photo was a coffin.
with the text, "Finally, everybody loves me." I went to my son and asked him, "Don't you have eyes? Don't you see what I see? Daddy, what are you talking about? She's the love of my life. Come on." And I saw, as more pressure I put on him, the closer they became. I said to my wife, "We need to change this game. We need to accept her the way she is. We don't have any other choice because we will lose our son." So we exercised radical acceptance towards her. We invited her to our home every weekend. We went together to a restaurant to eat together. We even went to our parents to visit them and introduced her to our parents. Our parents got nearly a heart attack. But we took the risk. And after a while, he didn't need to protect her anymore from us. And in the first time, at the very first time, he started to think a little bit more critically about his future with that girl. And the day came when my son came to me and said, "Daddy, we need to talk." "Okay, about what?" "Well, we need to talk about my relationship. I want your advice." "Okay. Well, what is your question? What would you like to talk about?" "Well, I imagine myself in 10 years as her husband, going out to some party with my colleagues where everybody takes their spouses with, and I didn't feel proud. I didn't feel that I was so proud to introduce her to my colleagues because we are not playing in the same league. I think I need to stop this relationship. I need to break up because she will ruin my life." What do you think what went on my inside? But, I need to admit, in the same time, while we involved her in our family life, I started to see behind the facade. And I met a person, and I started to love that person. Radical acceptance. If you cannot change it, accept it. Because acceptance is the starting point for the change. If there is something in your spouse that you cannot take and you cannot change, accept it. Because acceptance is the first step of change. Just like Carl Rogers described it, unconditioned acceptance is the deepest experience that a human being can make. Be the one to whom they connect their deepest experience in life. Radical acceptance. Number 5. Even a fool can shut the door. How do you deal with your conflicts? You can deal with your conflicts in 2 different ways. I teach it to my children too. Every time we have a fight with each other, I say to them, "Okay, stop for a second. Imagine we are at the top of a volcano. We are both on the top, with on the opposite side, with 2 buckets in our hand. In one bucket there is water, in the other is oil. Before you say anything, just think a little bit. Which bucket will you empty into the volcano? Because it will determine everything else what will happen next. If you put in the water, yes, it may smoke, but it will calm the situation down. But if you put in the oil, everything will be flooded. It is your decision. How do you handle the situation? It's your decision. Even a fool can shut the door. You don't need to be smart to shut the door, to yell, to say crazy things about the other. But stay, hold on. Think a little bit. Put your emotions aside and think and calm yourself down. Take responsibility for your behavior, even in a quarrel, even in a fight. And step number 6
Oh, yes, there is something else I want to show you about the conflicts. Many times when I speak with couples, they say, okay, we learned this new conflict resolution skills now, but if we look back to our past, we just see these scars and wounds, and we see our brokenness. We can never be healed again, they say. And I have this beautiful picture, which is very convincing in that state of mind. It is called kintsugi. I'm sure you have met this art in Japan. When something gets broken, they glue it together with gold. They mend it with gold, and it becomes more precious after it was broken than as it was new. So they break things intentionally in order to make it even more precious because they mend it with gold. And it's just the same what we can do in our relationships. We can mend the brokenness with gold. What is the gold in our relationship? Forgiveness, kindness, acceptance, comforting the other person. These are all lines of gold. And it's just a question of interpretation. When you look back to your past, what do you see? You see only the brokenness, or you see the fine lines of gold that you have mended your relationship with? And then we come to number 6. We need to celebrate the new marriage with a new covenant. Marriage is a covenant, not just a contract. You hold yourself to a contract as long as it is in your interest. But you stick to a covenant even when it hurts you. You stick to a covenant even when it is not in your interest. A covenant is something much stronger, much bigger than a contract. How does it look in a marriage? I always challenge the couples to write their new wedding vows. If today would be your marriage, your wedding day, what would be the vow that you would tell to your spouse? And I invite them to do it in reality, to write it down and to show it to me first without showing it to the other spouse. And then I ask them to make a party at home, to invite all their friends, all their close relatives, to have a party, and in the middle of the party, they should stand up and read this new wedding vows in front of all the witnesses to commit themselves again for each other, for their marriage. And then I ask something more. I ask them to draw a family armor. You know, just like in the old times, all these noble families had the family armor on the wall, and everybody knew what does it mean to belong to that family. And I asked them to draw it. And so many beautiful armors are getting created this way. This is one example. The couple allowed me to show it to you. It is one of my favorites. It is the Csikós family. Csikós means in Hungarian horse keeper. So they are the horse keeper family. This is their surname, their family name. And you see two horses there because it was the family name of both parts before their wedding too. So she was called horse keeper and he was called horse keeper too. And then they came together and founded their own family in 2007. So these are the two horse heads here. Here you see a horn, which is the symbol of that tribe to which they belong. In Hungary, there are different tribes, and this is a certain tribe they belong to. And then on the inside of this family armor, we see what is very important for them. There is their house and their family, and there is always laughter, always fun. They love to celebrate. They love to invite people. They live a very loud life. And they break out the walls of the house, so there are no walls. Of course, this is just symbolically. Then there is a bicycle. They love to go out.
They love hiking. They love to ride the bike in nature. This is something that they have in common. They like crafting, but not only with paper, but they make furniture. They renovate doors and houses, and they do it together just to have fun. They like to do something with their hands. And here is an apple. You see, it's not bitten, so it's not their preferred computer brand. It is the fruit of their marriage. The fruit of their marriage is a ministry in which they prepare other couples for marriage. So they want to live a life which benefits not only them, but which gives a gift to humanity. They want to feel that it has a reason that they came together as a couple, a reason which is bigger than themselves. They want to contribute for the good of the world. And then in the middle, we see the family members in a certain order. The most important member of the family is God. It is a Christian family. It's not an Adventist family, but it's a Christian family. Then we see the two rings, which represent the couple who are committed to each other, and then the three kids. And there is something more. You see the two hands stretching out of the armor. One holds a mug, which is a very strong symbol for them. They start every day with a mug of hot chocolate. And I learned something from them. It was always so difficult for us to have this family devotional at the morning because everybody is running. But if you hold a cup of hot chocolate in your hand, you cannot run away. You need to stay there until it gets colder so you can drink it. So this gives enough time to read a psalm, to sing a song together, to have a short prayer, and then everybody can drink the hot chocolate and go on its way. This is their family ritual for the morning. And then they have a couple ritual in the evening when the kids are finally in their beds. So they celebrate their love in very special ways. I like it how they express themselves with these symbols. Maybe it can be something for you as well to draw. What is your legacy that you would like to give to the coming generations? What does it mean to belong to the family that you created? What are your biggest values in that family? And how can you symbolize these values? So if you find yourself at the end of these stages, then maybe already something new has started. Let us see once again these stages of rebuilding your marriage from 1.0 to a very good, very vivid 2.0. Love is a decision. Make the decision. Whatever your emotions tell you, make the decision and stick to the decision. Number two, the grass is greener, but only if you water it. Don't wait for the overflow of emotions to take a first step. Just do it by head. Do it intentionally. Don't wait for the emotions. The emotions will line up after it. Reload your sexual integrity, because every attention, every emotion that you channel out of the relationship makes your relationship very vulnerable, and it will cause damage to your marriage. If you can change it, accept it, because radical acceptance is the first step of change. Even a fool can shut the door, and a new marriage with a new covenant starts here. So if you find yourself thinking about not what feels good, but what would be right in that moment, if you have already very specific ideas, how can you make your spouse feel better in the marriage? And what you can do to be today a better husband, a better wife than you used to be yesterday? If you find yourself on thinking about different symbols that can express what does it mean to belong to that family that you created, then welcome. you arrived into the 2.0.